From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. We continue now our discussion about the issue of the increase in poverty seen in the Coulee region.
There are countries where students are paid to study. So I think we don't have the same approach to education, and certainly there is a corollary between education and poverty that's been documented.
Recent census figures show the city of La Crosse has a 25% poverty rate, a substantial gain from 10 years ago. La Crosse County and many of the surrounding rural counties have traditionally had some of the highest rates of poverty in Wisconsin. Poverty is defined based on income, $11,000 a year for an individual, $22,000 a year for a family of four. Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom's guests in this program include two experts in the field, Coulee Camp Executive Director Grace Jones, who we'll hear from in just a moment, and WAFER Executive Director Heidi Blanke, who talks now about the mission of WAFER, one of the area's food banks.
We have three separate programs, even though we're all under one roof, basically. Our prime program is our food pantry, and that's instances where people come to the pantry and receive about 3 to 4 days' worth of mainly non-perishable groceries, but there's some perishable mixed in with that as well. Food stamps generally will bring a family through about 3 weeks. So there's still one more week of food needed for those families. And we give 3 to 4 days, and it's a pretty good 3 to 4 days' worth. Those individuals do come in. They can come in once a month. And we work from a standardized food list, but there is some variety and some choice within that list. Our second program is called Senior Share, and we deliver food packages to the 10 county meal sites. The food package is a 3 to 4 days' worth of food. In those instances, these are low-income seniors, fill out a food preference form, and then that food package is packed and delivered by volunteers, and that also is monthly. The third program we run is not actually one that we do ourselves, but we obtain grant money for the Boys and Girls Clubs to give a hearty afternoon snack to kids who might not otherwise have an evening meal.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Grace. And are you keeping up with demand?
We're keeping up with demand. We have a very good donor base, and they've been very generous. But our demand keeps increasing. So we're keeping up, but who knows how long that will last.
Why increasing? Would it the economy the last few years?
We're a no-questions-asked pantry, so we don't ask people why they've come in. I can guess that it's the economy. Certainly job loss has something to do with it. A significant portion of the people who come to WAFER are disabled, probably about 30-40%, somewhere in there. So that typically means, at least for many of our clients, also means that there's not a job that will support them with all the needs that they have.
With food prices going up, donations, they are indeed keeping a pace with food prices at this point. Any concern where the food will be more expensive, which it looks like it will be? I won't go into commodities and stuff like that, but the food right. prices will go up. Any concern that donations will fall behind in the future?
It's certainly a concern. Someone who is going to go to the store and buy us $20 worth of groceries is certainly going to get less, will get less for their money when that happens. We have a steady flow of money coming in, financial donations, possibly not as high per individual as they have been in the last few years, but they're still coming in steadily.
But no demographic, I mean, it seems to run the gamut.
We predominantly serve La Crosse County.
Young people, single parents, elderly couples.
Yeah. Our average family size is 3. So we're seeing more family units than we are individuals. We, again, without asking specifics
right.
and without having elaborate computer software to tell us those kinds of facts and figures, we know that about 40% of the people we serve are children under age 18, and about 8% are over age 60.
When can someone use the WAFER pantry? I mean, are they directed to you? Do they come on their own?
There's a variety
yes,
of reasons.
All of the above?
All of the above. Certainly a lot of referral from agencies, a lot of self-referral, a lot of referral from friends.
Have you had to turn away anybody yet?
We've never turned away anyone. We do, again, predominantly serve La Crosse County. If somebody right. comes in from another county, we will serve them once and then give them the information for food pantry that's going to be closer to them. But if we're the nearest full-service food pantry, we'll help that individual or that family.
What are the essentials at Wafer when it comes to food? I take it I'm not expecting somebody to come out with nacho chips and ho-hos. I mean, what when you go there, what do they have to choose from?
Okay, our standardized list, the non-perishable list, is canned fruits and vegetables, spaghetti sauce, tuna, cereal, peanut butter soup, some of the basics that would be in almost anybody's pantry. We also receive some perishable donations, whether it's from Walmart, who does supply us with a lot of day-old items, whether it's from the Hunger Task Force, whether it's from TFAB, the commodity program. We do receive some perishables. We do not use our funds to purchase the perishables. When they're there, it's great. When they're not, we cannot seek them out, but we will use our funds to keep that standardized list of the non-perishables on the shelves.
This is WPR's Newsmakers. We have a panel together talking about poverty. We've heard from a Cashton resident who found herself recently impoverished, and she's working her way back from that. Grace Jones is executive director for Cooley Cap, an organization that helps lower-income people become self-sufficient again. Heidi Blanke, executive director of Wafer, a food pantry in La Crosse. I wanted to ask some general questions here, more to pick your brain than anything here. And this one belongs in a philosophy class, but hear me out here. As a society, do you feel we are addressing poverty the way we should be? And I'm talking about as communities, as churches, organizations, individuals. Are we paying enough attention to those that are struggling?
I don't think that we can pay enough attention as long as we have a stigma associated with poverty.
What's the stigma?
The stigma that it's your fault, that if you just worked harder, you wouldn't be in poverty. There's no reason for you to come to a food pantry, just go get a job. And that's not possible, as we've heard today. That's just not going to happen for a lot of people. But I think there's still that underlying current of you got yourself into this, get out. And that's not a reality. So I think we do have a way to go as far as how we approach poverty.
Do we take it seriously?
We're taking it more seriously all the time. I think because more people are in poverty and more people who never thought they would be in poverty are there. You know, every week we have somebody come into the pantry who says, I never thought I'd be here. So again, instances in which they had their job and everything was going right, or they were in an accident, or they lost their job.
Grace?
Well, one of my favorite phrases is, it's difficult to pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you don't have any boots. And so I think that there's an element of choices that people make, and sometimes they make poor choices, especially when they're young. And there are direct routes into poverty, teen pregnancy, substance abuse, dropping out of high school. So very young people can make fairly substantial mistakes and end up in poverty. And then it's hard to get out of it. It's a long climb out. But so personal choice is part of it. There are probably some people who use and abuse the system, and you have to recognize that. We all know that there are some people like that. But guess what? Not just poor people. Those kinds of people are at all economic levels, I would maintain. What we find at Cooley Cap is there are just a lot of people who get caught due to circumstances, and with a small boost, a small bit of help for a while, they can turn their lives around and do quite well. But if that help isn't there in the middle, either from their family or other resources, then our agency, Human Services, agencies like Heidi's can help them out and get them through to a better life. And that's pretty wonderful about our country, that we have resources that can help people get from poverty and then out of poverty.
Do you keep track of anything like a turnover rate? When somebody comes in, they've had your programs, they're ready to go out on their own again. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, we it can certainly some programs like home weatherization, it's more how much did their fuel bill drop, how much more comfortable is the family. So in that kind of program, the fuel bill drops by half in many cases, and it's a fabulous program. That it's part of housing preservation. The another example would be in the transitional housing program, which is taking a homeless family, working with them up to 2 years, and having them leave the program in a rental apartment that they're paying for with a job and education that they need. Most of those folks, even though they could stay in the program 2 years, they actually, our average is 1 year. Now, during that 1 year, we're subsidizing their rent. They have a case manager assigned. They're given a lot of help to turn their life around, but they actually go from homelessness to self-sufficiency, average 1 year. But there's another group of people who, because of disability or illness, they will probably remain in poverty. And what I like about our country there is we don't just, to put this kind of meanly, lie in the street and die. We help them. We help them survive. And I think that's a good thing about America. That's not true throughout the world. We at least are trying to help people when they actually can help themselves and improve their lives.
Heidi, feel free if you want to add to that. Let me know. If not, that's fine, too.
I mean, I certainly see it from the donor's point of view or from the donor aspect in that we rarely have people say, oh, I can't help Wayfair. I don't believe in what they do. You know, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are there for us, either donating financially, giving volunteer time, donating food, doing food drives. So we see tremendous support for what we do.
Are you too optimists? I mean, the reason why I ask is you deal with people who are in a very bad place in their life. Things are looking bleak, and you're both basically mentioning that the communities, while we may not be spending enough attention on the problem, our hearts seem to be in the right place. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think in this kind of job, you have to be an optimist. Because if you approach it from a point of view that things are not going to get better, that you what you're doing isn't going to help people enough, the organization itself will go in the hole. So I think you have to remain optimistic that what you're doing is helping. And without that kind of approach, I don't think I'd be able to start new programs or look for new ways to help people.
At Cooley Cap, we are all about believing in people's ability to grow and change and improve their lives. They have to take the lead on that, but we're there to help. And so I think we're completely optimistic. And we're always looking for creative new solutions and innovative approaches to solve community problems. And that's why the work is actually exciting and fulfilling for most of our staff. Now, there are very difficult days when our field staff are confronted with just very, very sad situations, and it's hard work for them at times. But I know we just have a really dedicated staff at Cooley Cap that believes in the work, and we're grateful we get to do it actually. And many donors support us as well, and we're so grateful to them, to both our donors and funders.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. The topic today is poverty. And here in La Crosse, 25% of the individual population is considered in poverty. The county's overall poverty rate is 15%, both numbers dramatic from 10 years ago. For my generation, there's a lot of us that seem to spend beyond our means. We get a bigger house than we can afford. We get a boat where maybe we don't have any business doing so. And then tragedy strikes, and we're in a lot of trouble. Do you ever see cases like that of people that have overextended themselves?
Yeah, we certainly at Cooley Cap have, and especially when we started to do foreclosure prevention programming and helping people who were confronted with foreclosures, they did. There were far too many people making money off of housing deals that were inappropriate for families. Once the old kind of underwriting standards got dropped and everybody was just trying to sell houses during the housing bubble, a lot of people got set up for failure. They were so excited about finally owning a home. So these are really tragic circumstances when the subprime loans went into effect and families got overextended, and that's self-correcting now. There's supposed to be another 2.5 million, I think, foreclosures this coming year. And so in the work with those families who were going through foreclosure, we saw a number of people who were overextended. And also when their circumstances changed, especially due to job loss, it was really quite horrible for them to consider scaling back their lifestyle, giving up cell phones, giving up, you know, the cable TV and the other things they needed to do to get things under control. This was a different kind of person for us to work with, and it was a little bit hard for the staff as well to cope with the resistance of these families who needed to learn new financial management.
And scale things down.
And scale things
whittle
back.
Down.
Whittle down, give up the luxuries, yes. And it was tough to advocate with them that this is something you must do. They absolutely refused, some of them.
Do either of you, Grace or Heidi, will we always have poverty? Do you ever see? I mean, I'm going heavily into maybe the word is hypothetical at this point. Could we ever get to a point where poverty is erased?
Well, I don't think we'll ever erase poverty because we.
I mean, theoretically, is it possible?
Well, it would depend on what you did to do that. But
okay.
When somebody is disabled and they can't work and they can't generate income, unless you're going to supplant a total, complete middle-class income for them, they're probably going to be in poverty. Society at this point is willing to support that individual up to a poverty level, but not really a middle-class level. So it's hard to picture poverty being completely eliminated.
Heidi, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would have to agree. Echoing a lot of those sentiments, I personally do not foresee a time in my lifetime in which poverty would be eliminated. I'm sure hypothetically, in the perfect world, I suppose we could eliminate poverty. But it would take, again, a lot of supporting organizations regardless.
Do other countries do a better job with their poverty levels than we do in the U.S.?
I think there are role models for the United States out there. Clearly, some countries do much worse than we do, and some countries, I feel, do much better. But those are countries that have chosen to actually, for example, provide health care to their citizens. And as you know, that's just a huge debate in our country with, as of yesterday, the House voted to repeal the Health Care Reform Act. And so we're in the middle of trying to do some kind of fix on health care because of the brutal costs that employers are enduring and people are enduring. I think that's really probably a huge issue that's affecting the ability of businesses to have jobs and for people to survive. Some countries have done better at fixing that issue than we have.
Please, Heidi.
One other addition to the way we handle poverty in the United States. Certainly, the topic of health care was the first thing that came to mind when I thought about other countries. And there are other countries that also put more emphasis on education and allow students to be full-time students. There are countries where students are paid to study. So I think we don't have the same approach to education, and certainly there is a corollary between education and poverty that's been documented. So I think that would be another area we could work on and possibly emulate some other places.
I want to get your reaction to this one. We have a new governor, Governor Scott Walker, and he has pledged to, I don't remember the exact number, but lots of new jobs in Wisconsin. When you hear that, does it make you hopeful? Is it, let's wait and see what happens? I mean, is there concern that these will be low-earning jobs? Or, I guess, what do you think of the idea, this promise of bringing so many new jobs in? Heidi, you have the face that says, I'd like
maybe
to go
I've
first.
Maybe I've been around long enough to be quite skeptical when I hear statements like that.
Why?
I think it takes a lot more than just saying I'm going to add jobs. I think you need to begin to develop people from the bottom up, that simply handing over a job, especially a minimum wage job, is a start, but certainly not enough to address the level of poverty that Grace and I see.
Heidi's absolutely right. In fact, one of the things that I'm regularly aggravated about is the minimum wage and how it has not kept pace with inflation. So, for example, if wages had kept pace with inflation and increases in worker productivity since the 1970s, the minimum wage would now be over $14 an hour, which is actually a living wage, what's called a housing wage as well, that people can survive on. And instead, for decades at the federal level, they granted no increases in the federal minimum wage, took no action until recently, and cities and states had to lead the way on the issue. Instead of dealing with minimum wage, they put in place the welfare to work programs, which basically moved people from one form of poverty, which was welfare, to another form, which is low wage dead end jobs. And so, given public policy for decades, it's just ironic to me that we blame people who aren't making enough money as if somehow that's their fault, when our society has not kept the minimum wage up with worker productivity and inflation.
Cooley Cap Executive Director Grace Jones and Wafer Executive Director Heidi Blanke joined Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom for this conversation on the issue of poverty. Recent Census Bureau statistics show 1 in 4 La Crosse residents live in poverty, an 8% increase in the last 10 years. We'd also like to thank Rosanna Hernandez of Cashton, who shared her story of living in poverty earlier in the program. For this week, that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Steve Rysom, Maureen McCollum, and Mary Meehan Stroob. The senior news editor and producer for Newsmakers is John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. On the next Newsmakers, we'll have details of a school referendum to fund operational costs in the Onalaska School District, which people will vote on later this month. And Wisconsin School Superintendent Tony Evers will discuss his plans to reinvent the funding formula for K-12 schools.
The idea that somehow the only determiner or surrogate for how wealthy someone is property value is just idiotic. And so this plan really kind of nudges the system, albeit slowly, but nudges the system away from that to really take a look at someone's ability to pay.
That's on Newsmakers next Thursday at 5 on Wisconsin Public Radio.